This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitchen-Milides, as ever, with a very tired Sid Lowe. That's the default setting on a Monday for Sydney, but particularly more tired this Monday because you've been in Bilbao again, Sid. Again.
Can't keep away from the place.
You really can't. It's, but, you know, it is bloody lovely, so I do understand.
It's a good place to go, yeah. Of all the places to be kind of... stuck in, it's not a bad place to be stuck in.
Stuck in Bilbao, podcast title already after a few seconds. Anyway, this is what happened on match day 31. Friday saw Betis end their run of four consecutive defeats by beating Celta Vigo 2-1 at home. Really bad result for Celta, who remained just above the relegation zone. Saturday saw Atletico Madrid come from behind to beat Girona by 3-1. Antoine Griezmann scoring twice for the Rojiblancos. After Artan Dovbik had given Girona the lead, and with that goal, moving to the top of the La Liga goalscorer charts out on his own. He's got 17 league goals for the season, the Ukrainian. Then I witnessed possibly the worst game of professional football that I've ever seen in my entire life.
No, come on.
All right, mate, but it was bad. It was
horse. We did have the horse moment, though. That was all right. That made the whole thing worthwhile.
Rayo nil, Getafe nil. Hold on to the horse moment, because we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Not so much the football. Then Real Madrid went to Mallorca and won by 1-0. Aurelien Tchouaméni scoring the only goal of the game in the first half. A much changed Real Madrid side. A much changed Barca side also beating Cadiz by 1-0. Brilliant bicycle kick from João Félix to seal the points for Barca. Then on Sunday, Sevilla won 2-0 at Las Palmas. A result which definitively means that they're not getting relegated this season. Yeah. We knew that already, but that means they aren't going down. Granada are going down, but they managed to win for the first time in 3.5 months. They beat Alaves by 2-0. You were on hand to witness Athletic draw 1-1 with Villarreal. They really should have won, but Villarreal were gifted a very bizarre penalty in the 95th minute, which was dispatched and a point apiece. And Real Sociedad also gave away a late penalty at home to Almeria to draw 2-2. Really quite disappointing result for the Churi Urdin, and really a quite pointless point for Almeria, but they still continue to give off relatively good sensations despite being one of the worst teams in La Liga history. Monday is Osasuna against Valencia. Guys, while I've got you and you're listening, just want to tell you about our Patreon. You should join us. Patreon.com/TSFP. There is loads of bonus content, particularly this week. This week of all weeks, and this Champions League quarterfinal, second legs, and the Clásico coming up. You're going to get a Q&A pod, as always, on a Tuesday. Big bonus pod on a Thursday discussing Champions League and a look ahead to the Clásico. Come and join us. It's around €4 a month, £4 a month. Now, Sid, you really, really, really didn't know what to write your column on this week. And when you have absolutely no idea, it means that it hasn't necessarily been a classic weekend in La Liga. What did you decide to write upon about?
Well, in the end, I sort of did get a gift, which is that, as you've already mentioned, that penalty in the last minute against Athletic off the back of what was the perfect week. And you kind of feel like it's been ruined. And of course, it hasn't been ruined. That's kind of the point, that it hasn't been ruined. But it was... I'm actually not entirely sure that it's a bad decision so much as I think we have a problem with the concepts. And as our listeners know, when we talk about referees,
it's not a penalty.
I talk a lot about this and about how, for me, it's not about the concrete issues. It's about the kind of the conceptual issues and the way that games are refereed. Because I thought Cuadra Fernandez last night basically spent the whole game stopping the game. The whole game, stopping the game for tiny little things. Santi Comesaña got sent off for almost nothing. There's a penalty that's a rebound off a leg and the hand is up, but that's not necessarily an unnatural position, because if you're sliding in to make a block, where else is your hand going to be? It caused a kind of a whole discussion about it. But for me, in a way, it was more about kind of tying up the pretty much the best week Athletic have had in 40 years.
After winning the Copa del Rey and then celebrating in spectacular fashion, why don't you tell us about the celebration you attended on Thursday instead of actually talking about the game? Because that was pretty historic what you witnessed. I mean, you sent us, I think, close to maybe 200 photos and videos of being inside.
Was it that many? Sorry.
It was an extraordinary amount. None of the actual Gabarra, by the way. But
No.
Didn't manage to see that, but managed to see the wild scenes of jubilation on Thursday. Reports of around 1 million people being in the streets of Bilbao, even if it wasn't 1 million, even if it's 800,000 or 700, it's a ridiculous amount of people that came out to celebrate the Copa del Rey for Athletic Club, their first major trophy in 40 years. And Sid, you felt you had to be there to witness it because it was such a momentous occasion.
Yeah, and I think as well because of everything that is built around it. So obviously the long and short of this is that Athletic, unlike other clubs, have a tradition of going up the River Nerdby on a barge rather than doing a open top bus parade, although they did then get on a bus as well from there to the regional government afterwards. But actually, it's a funny one in a way, because this is seen as this big tradition, but it's actually something they'd only ever done twice.
Yes.
They did it in 83 and they did it in 84. And it was based on this idea that there's a folk song that talks about a barge going down the river. There's a regional league second tier team, what are they called, Oliaga, I think they were called, that won a league back in the 20s and celebrated by going on a barge trip up the river, and this kind of idea was recovered in 83 when they won the league, and then again in 84 when they won the double. But what happened, I think in part, is that they went 40 years without winning anything, so the idea of the barge kind of became a tradition through not happening. It became a tradition through absence, and because the photographs of that barge celebration in 1984 are everywhere in the city. And I think what happened was you got this kind of sense of longing, this idea that, right, we've got to get the barge out, we've got to get the barge out. And in recent years, of course, since that final, they've lost 6 Copa del Rey finals, as well as a Europa League final. They've lost 5 of those Copa del Rey finals since 2009. So this is kind of longing for it. And I think you'll back me up on this. In Spain, as soon as anyone says the word Gabarra, they immediately know this is it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt like the whole of Athletic's search for the Copa del Rey title was actually about the search for the Gabarra. The Gabarra was kind of the barge was this kind of the embodiment of everything they are. The embodiment of the fact they're a bit different. The embodiment that there were ridiculous numbers of people out to watch it, because in 84 they talked about 1 million people on the streets. The embodiment of that idea, of that longing, that desperation to recover that. The embodiment as well, I think, of the idea of Athletic as a club that buys into history and tradition and trying to emulate previous generations and trying to give continuity to what they did, even in a case like this, when it's a tradition that's kind of largely invented. But of course, it's invented 40 years ago, so yes, it becomes a tradition by not happening, which is kind of contradictory. So you get this in the sort of the enormousness of all of this. And I think the desperation of it and the fact that Athletic have been in many finals, the fact that they are a cup team, that deep down they know they're not going to win the league. In fact, this was raised last night with Ernesto Valverde, and I quite liked his response. I like his response to most things, actually, but I liked his response on this. He was asked about, you know, emulating the 84 team and having finally been able to take over from them. The players from 84, who, by the way, have been part of the celebrations all week, and I think that's a big part of this as well, that idea that they embrace their tradition and their past and that they feel like they're continuing on from them. That those players from 84 felt like they too wanted to kind of hand on the baton, if you like, pass on this generational change. And so Valverde was asked, if, you know, how this compares to that and so on. He said, well, I think we might find it a little bit difficult to win the league that they won. I think realistically, that's not happening anytime now. So, of course, the Copa del Rey is their everything. And the numbers on the streets, as you say, is it a million? I don't know. But it's a 13-kilometre stretch from Getxo, where the barge sets out, with a kind of a flotilla of 160 boats on the river alongside them, people in rowboats. It's just extraordinary. But it's a 13-kilometre stretch, and it's packed both sides of the river all the way up to the town hall, which is where they get out, and then they have the celebrations there, and then they get on a bus and they go to the regional government, but it's been a week of enormous celebrations. And I suppose one way of summing this up, at least the Sunday game, was that all four of the sports papers in Spain led their preview pieces on the word hangover. Would Athletic be able to play after the hangover of this week? And actually, they played really well.
For more on the celebrations and Gamarra, what that word means to Athletic Club, read Sid's absolutely brilliant piece for ESPN from last week. Let's move on and talk about another game that you were at this weekend at the Metropolitano with Atletico Madrid, beating Girona by 3-1. This is an absolutely massive result for Atletico Madrid. It was a big game, possibly the biggest game of the weekend. It was third against fourth. They conceded early on as well, but they managed to get this victory, Sid. What was this game like?
Yeah, it was... I actually thought we saw the good and bad of Girona in this game. So we saw the way that they used the ball. The opening goal was really, really nicely constructed. I was very struck by something, and obviously we kind of have seen this at other stages in the season, but I suppose on Saturday, being in the stadium and being able to, you know, look exactly where I wanted, and it being a kind of a very Girona performance in the first half, one of the things that was really noticeable was that Jan Couto spends most of his time off the pitch. You know, they're so keen to open the pitch as wide as they can that his starting position is off the pitch almost all the time. So when he receives the ball's on the pitch, but he's off it because they're trying to get absolutely every inch of that pitch. And they kept the ball really well and they used it well. But I also thought they were defensively weak. And they're under pressure, aren't they, Girona, now? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, is that 5 defeats in the last 8, I think, for them? And I think they've just about got enough of a lead, enough of a cushion to get that final Champions League place. But they allowed Atletico back into it. They give away a pretty silly penalty, which is a pretty clear handball, to be perfectly honest. And then they go 2-1 down. But before that, they had what I think is a really, really clear penalty, not even looked at by the VAR, which I found completely and utterly baffling. And then after that, then you get Atletico go 2-1 up, 3-1 up, Griezmann playing very, very well. And as you say, I think it's a big result for Atletico, this, because it just removes, I think, any nagging doubt that... Well, not any nagging doubt, actually, to be fair. Most of the nagging doubt about whether they get a Champions League place. Because, of course, you have this, and then you have the fact that Athletic didn't win on Sunday night. So Athletic are now 4 points behind, isn't it? Had it been that they didn't beat Girona and Athletic won, which is what we expected, and, of course, then everything looks really, really, really different in that final Champions League place. In fact, I don't know about you, but my personal suspicion is that if Athletic are going to get a Champions League place, it might even be Girona they capture rather than Atletico.
Oh, really? You think they're falling that hard, Girona? Well, they've got a home game against Cádiz, then they're against Las Palmas, then they play Barcelona, then Alaves, Villarreal.
I think Girona will hang on. I think they're good enough to hang on. And I think they should be okay. But I think that's the element. So the other thing, of course, from Atletico's point of view, and this is true of the Barcelona and Real Madrid games as well, is there was a slight... sort of a sense of, well, this isn't really the thing. The thing is about next week.
Yeah, but it was still a big... I mean, you know.
Well, that's why this game is different to the Barcelona and Real Madrid ones, because this one was one that mattered. In truth, the Barcelona and Real Madrid games didn't feel that much like they mattered. Although, of course, had Barca won and Madrid not, then maybe it would have mattered in terms of the title race.
Yes, but that did not happen. We'll touch briefly upon those games in a moment, but they weren't the most significant games of the weekend, nor would they be the best spectacles. Speaking of not much of a spectacle, we were both at Vallecas, Sid, to see Rayo. Rayo 0, Getafe 0. I went to the butcher's this morning, and my butcher is a Rayo season ticket holder, so we talk about our shared fondness for Rayo, and we were speaking about the game, and he was blaming Getafe a lot for Rayo's inability to play, because he said they do all these little faltitas, all these little fouls, they go down, they manage to waste time, they don't really want to play football. And I was watching with the game with some guys who'd come over for England, and they were like, Getafe really aren't interested in having the ball. Even when they can play a pass, they just boot it forward. It was, it's not, you know, anti-football, it is a way of playing football, but it is a way that also limits your opponent's ability to play football. That said, Rayo had a lot of the ball and did very, very little with it in the final third. And I was, you know, you were looking for things to write about this this week, and I suggested the fall off of Rayo in terms of entertainment. Because last season, I think you tweeted quite a few times, going to Vallecas is the best fun you can have in Spanish football
absolutely.
At the moment. Now, I went back and I had a look what was going on after match day 31 in La Liga last year. After match day 31, Rayo were ninth. They'd scored 13 more goals than they have now, and they'd just beaten Barcelona 2-1 at home. Last week against, on Saturday against Rayo, they didn't score. They didn't look like scoring. It was yet another 0-0 draw. And this sense of fun, this sense of action, this sense of stuff sort of constantly happening is gone, but like really noticeably gone. And it's perhaps a coincidence or not, manager month in the Premier League this was was Andoni Iraola for the month of March. So there we go.
Yeah, I mean, look, of course it's not coincidence, because it is a product of the way that Iraola had structured the team, the way that he wanted them to play, and his level of connection with the players. Now, obviously, the new manager, Iñigo Pérez, was Iraola's assistant coach. In fact, the reason that he's at Rayo now is because he couldn't get a work permit to continue to work with Iraola in Bournemouth. So he came back, and they were looking for someone who could kind of reconnect them to that. But of course, he came back, and he's been in the job, 8 weeks, I guess, off the top of my head. It might be a little bit more than that, I'm not sure. And of course, the team then was in a kind of an emotionally difficult place, I think. I thought there were moments in the first 25 minutes, maybe, on Saturday, but really not very much after that. And Iñigo talked post-game about this, about wanting volume, which is what Iraola always talked about. And you just said there, that idea that things are always happening. But also knowing that they needed to be defensively solid, that they weren't in a particularly good position, that they're struggling at home to score goals, they don't have that precision to take advantage of the few chances that they make, and it's not happening. And he talked about, if you like, the, how would I explain this, I suppose the emotional component to the way that they are playing, that this is a team. And one of the things that really struck us, I think, on Saturday was how often they actually were in okay positions, but the passing was poor, or the inability to control the ball, or they give away really, really stupid possession in really, really bad parts of the pitch. And they look like a team that's fearful, I thought, at least. I think I would agree with you, by the way, that the game is conditioned absolutely by how Getafe played. And the fact that the game was bad, I think, was something Getafe wanted and something that Rayo didn't. I think that's true. And I think it's quite difficult to overcome that when a team like Getafe proposes that. And it's not necessarily a dig at Getafe, it's just an analysis of what we were watching. But I was struck by how often Rayo, in position where once upon a time they would have done something with it, did nothing. And I think, and as I say, Iñigo post-game said, look, when you're in a comfortable position in the table, these things happen, they flow, and it comes naturally. And when you get to the kind of position we're in now, there's a nervousness, and people don't dare to take risks that you need them to take. It's not just that you want them to, you need them to take risks, or else you're not going to get the things that Rayo need. And for, apart from that first, 20 minutes or so, 20, 25 minutes, Rayo really didn't make very much happen at all.
Tell them about the horse, Sid.
Well, I mean, this was the best moment of the game. And I must admit, I now am not 100% sure who it is. I think it's Unai, but I'm not certain. Goes for this kind of very, I'm not even sure what it is. It's just a hoof, or, well, hoof would be kind of ironic, or fitting, depending on how you want to put it. Hoof or shot across, whatever it is. And the ball sails over the end of the stand, of course, where there isn't a stand because it's just a wall. And it bounces in the street. And of course, because where we're sitting is high
on that side looking at the street. You can see Avenida El Bufera and you can see the road that runs behind the back of the stadium, and it bounces up the road and it hits a police horse. Now, no animals were hurt in this.
No.
Don't worry about it. It was bouncing really quite softly at this point, but it did hit a police horse, which got a bit of a cheer from the people. And then, as if this story wasn't slightly weird enough as it was, a man with a guitar over his shoulder appeared to go and get the ball and to steal it. I mean, it's not like he can give it back. That wall must be 15 metres high. You know, you're not going to be able to throw it back into the ground. It's, you know, it's not going like going past a park pitch or a kid's playground or something. Anyway, so this man, obviously, and I think quite rightly, thinks, brilliant, I've got myself a football. The two coppers on the police horses clearly aren't having this. And there's actually a bit of a negotiation ensues. I'm not going to overplay it. It wasn't that long, but there's a discussion ensues. At which point, of course, the fans who can see this high in that stand are sort of whistling a bit and basically saying, let him have it. And the police, I don't know how clearly they can hear us, but they can probably hear the whistles, eventually give in and allow this guy to have the ball. And he scurries off up Avenida El Bufera to cheers from the Rayo Vallecano fans. And that, my friends, was without doubt the best moment of a really poor afternoon in Vallecas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Brilliantly described there by Sydney. So yeah, that's Vallecas. All kinds of stuff are happening. I had some sensational huevos rotos before, by the way, in Mesón Moreno.
That's good.
Yes,
excellent.
With some, you know, posted the picture on Twitter as well, and people seem to agree.
Did it come with ham? Was it just the eggs and the chips, or was it ham as well?
Of course, with ham. Jamón ibérico, yes.
I like it with chistorra.
I know you do.
I like a bit of huevos rotos with chistorra.
You do like a bit of Navarrese sausage, don't you, Sid?
I do.
Maybe that's another name of the podcast, Navarrese sausage.
A bit of Navarrese sausage.
Moving swiftly on, we could talk about the Real Madrid and Barcelona games at the weekend, but maybe we could talk about them with the view on the upcoming Champions League games as well, because there were considerable changes made to both teams. I guess in terms of both Real Madrid and Barcelona, there's not a huge amount of analysis to necessarily make. They both had 1-0 away wins against teams in the relegation battle, both making changes, and you know, it all worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it was exactly the kind of pre-European game that you want. You win, no one gets injured, you forget about it immediately, and you move on to the next thing. And the games don't create any kind of doubt in your mind. Maybe you could argue that because João Félix scores a nice overhead kick for Barcelona, that creates a bit of doubt about maybe you think about including him in midweek, but I don't really think it changes anything. And so they were kind of the ideal Saturday evening, get this over with games for both of them. And obviously the main thing being that there was no injuries. I must admit, the João Félix overhead kick, I have two problems with this one. Now, this is going to sound like such a killjoy.
I know where we're going with this, but go on.
Problem number one, he kicks it with his shin. He has no idea where that's going. Admittedly, it's still a great leap, but he does well to get to it and so on and so forth. And number two, Issa Carthelén,
who doesn't dare to put his head where he needs to put it to stop João Félix. And actually really does. I mean, I'm not one to use this kind of language, but here we go. I'm going to use this kind of language. Genuinely bottles it. Right? It's not that hard to get to. Genuinely bottles it. But then brilliantly, having refused to put his head where he needed to stop this shot, then went down holding his head as if he had put his head where he needed to, sort of rolling around and pretending he'd been kicked, which I thought was quite funny. Anyway, that's not really the point, but it did make me laugh a little bit.
Something interesting from the Real Madrid game is that Eder Militao, of course, only came on in injury time.
Yeah,
played very little. Yeah. Which means that surely he can't start against Manchester City.
No, I would agree with you. I don't really see a scenario in which he can start against City if he hasn't played this game. And, you know, bear in mind that even last week, before the first leg against Manchester City, we were saying this, weren't we, that he'd been given, what was it, 2 or 3 minutes. And I think we described it as being a kind of a reward for his rehabilitation rather than a genuine test. And we assumed that the genuine test would come in Mallorca, that he would be given a start. And I think the fact that he hasn't been given a start, or even, say, 20 minutes or half an hour, I think you're right. I think it means that Garnacho plays in Manchester.
What's your gut saying about both of these teams, Sid, in terms of their progress, and Atleti as well?
My gut says Atletico go through. I think my gut says that Barcelona... Oh, I don't know. I think Barca go through.
So difficult.
I think Barca go through.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid is the one that I think if it wasn't Real Madrid, I'd be saying they're the ones that don't go through. But it's Real Madrid, and we've learned. Yes. If anything we've learned with Real Madrid over the years, it's never, 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 never rule them out. But I think if we're looking...
Yeah, but away from home.
Exactly.
We often do rule them out.
I think if we're looking
home,
this from the point of view of as rational an analysis as we can, then I think we're saying Atletico and Barca through and Real Madrid out. But it absolutely would not surprise me for the complete opposite to be the case, for Real Madrid to end up being the only ones that go through.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Because it's Real Madrid, I mean,
but
and
that's
it's
just
Europe,
conditioned
isn't it?
By...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
As I said, the rational analysis
Real Madrid
is the first one.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say it's correct, but it's the rational analysis.
Okay. Well, we'll see if Sid's rational analysis is correct. We've got Barcelona against PSG and Dortmund against Atleti on Tuesday, and then City against Real Madrid on Wednesday. Presumably, you're going to the Olympic Stadium, Sid, in Barca?
Yeah.
In Barca on Tuesday? Good. Of course, in the Segunda this weekend, we had leaders Leganés being held to a 0-0 draw by second place to Espanyol on Friday night. Oviedo drew 1-1 at Mirandés, Eibar 1-2-0 at Andorra. So the top six is Leganés on 62 points, then Eibar, Espanyol and Valladolid all level on 58 points, then Sporting and Oviedo on 55 points. Sydney, this is crazy. I mean, all jokes aside, the Segunda this season has been ludicrously tight. Ludicrously tight.
Yeah, and in fact, this weekend almost looks like one of the least tight weekends because you've got those... three in second, third and fourth, who've now got a 3-point gap to Oviedo and Sporting. Whereas I don't think the gap between second and the rest of the playoff teams has been that big for quite a few weeks now. Failing to beat Mirandés at home, having been 1-0 up until, what was it, the 86th minute, is a real kick in the teeth.
Yes.
Because this was the good news, of course, is looking at the table that Oviedo are still in a promotion place, a playoff place, having spent the whole season just never quite getting there. And despite this poor result, are still there. But it was a weekend, I think, to have taken a step forward and it hasn't happened. And it's very annoying.
Very annoying, I can imagine. Only 7 points off.
Yeah,
spots,
absolutely. I mean, it's
extremely
completely,
tight.
As you say, that it's so tight. There's genuinely just about anyone from first to 10th will still think they've got a chance of going up.
Before we go, obviously, this is the Spanish football podcast, not the German football podcast, but it would be remiss of us not to congratulate the auburn-bearded ball of Basque sex. That is Xavi Alonso. What a man. What a man. I mean, you know, if I didn't fancy him enough before already, my word, what he's done there is quite extraordinary.
It is absolutely ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
I mean, they've won the league without being beaten. They are in the final of the cup and they are still in the Europa League, again, without having been beaten. It's just an extraordinary season. Bear in mind that he took over with them in the relegation zone. Now, have they made signings since then? Yes, they have. But still, no one got even close to imagining this. It's their first ever league title. It is just... I mean, it's properly astonishing. And it's...
Just not only is he just unbelievably gorgeous, but he's turned out to be a brilliant, brilliant manager as well, yeah, after an incredible footballing career. This is really quite extraordinary. When are we going to see him as Real Madrid manager?
That's an interesting question, because I don't know that it's guaranteed. In fact, I know it isn't guaranteed. But the assumption is that the next step is definitely Real Madrid. I don't think that it necessarily falls into place quite like that. And I think it says something about him, by the way, the fact that he wanted to continue, that he's, yes, had this sort of approach before, that his timings are his and he won't be forced into it. And, you know, I don't want to pick on anyone in particular, but there was that analysis a few weeks ago from Richard Keys. And I pointed out on Twitter, but I don't want to pick up on it because it's Richard Keys. But I think it's actually quite an interesting leaping off point for us, which the analysis was that he lacked the balls to go and take a big job now. And that in the future, he'll never be in this strong a position where basically everyone in Europe wants him at a time when everyone's changing clubs. All the clubs are looking for a manager. In other words, the ones cited were Liverpool, Man United, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. Now, there's so many flaws in this, but this is why I think it's interesting. And it's not to pick on Richard Keys. It's that, first of all, you don't need everyone to want you at the same time. You just need one and the one that you want to go to. So it doesn't matter if you've got four or one. If that one is the right one, it doesn't matter. The idea that Manchester United is an option that would attract him is ridiculous. Real Madrid had already agreed that Ancelotti was continuing, although I must admit, I think that was in part because they got wind of the fact that Alonso probably wasn't going to go there. I think that is part of it. So in fairness, maybe that would have been different had he taken that leap. And then the other thing is that idea that you're stupid doing this because you'll never have this many options again cannot be uttered in the same argument that then says, and you've bottled it. Now, surely it's the complete opposite. If you're saying you won't have these options again, the bottle jobs response would be to take one of these now. The man who trusts in himself and believes in himself,
yeah,
says, okay, I will choose the timings and I won't go yet and I will do this differently and I will stay at a club who, Richard Keys said, well, next year they won't win anything, they won't be any good. Well, I'll tell you what, that's not a bottle job then, is it? The bottle job is saying, oh, we might not win anything next year, I'll leave now while the going's good. It's the complete opposite.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm surprised we've paid quite that much attention.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. The point
there
I was
are probably
trying,
a lot of people that do think that in
yeah,
the UK.
Yeah. The point I was trying to make really was it, using that as something to argue against is that Xavi is different, I think, and I genuinely think he is different in terms of choosing his moments, in terms of what it is that moves him, in terms of what it is that he wants to do. And also, he's very young. I don't think he's in the slightest hurry. So what I'm doing is bringing it back to your question, which is, when does he go to Real Madrid? I don't think he's in a hurry to do that. I really don't.
It's true. There's no reason for it to be right now, is there?
Or even next year, which is what everyone's assumption is. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily need to be next year.
Let's see what happens with Xavi Alonso. But congratulations to yet another Spanish manager achieving great things in Europe. That's all for today's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be over at patreon.com/TSFP for the rest of the week. Loads of bonus content there for not very much money at all. So drop us a few quid and we'll do lots of podcasts for you. Alternatively, don't pay us anything and we will still produce free podcasts for you every single Monday. So, you know, you decide, amigos. Adios.
Cheerio.